I want to talk about facts about your beliefs. This sermon's going to be kind of a more of a kind of a logical, just thinking about this issue of our beliefs. I'm not going to teach what we believe in this one today, more just the general concept of how important it is that we make decisions about beliefs. Let me give you an illustration to start. Several years ago, I watched a movie, I forget the name of it, but part of the plot of the movie was some bad guys that were able to tap into a local airport and change the data in their computers so that it was saying the planes were coming in at a higher altitude than they actually were. And so as a result, planes would crash because they'd say they're 200 feet from the ground and all of a sudden they meet the ground because they're not 200 feet, you're 2 feet. That kind of thing, and people died in the movie. The tower kept telling the pilots, you're fine, because the instruments, the data said they were, like, let's say 200 feet from the ground. The pilots kept thinking, we're fine, because their data that they were getting said they're 200 feet from the ground. The instruments said they're 200 feet from the ground. Well, all three of them were wrong. And so they had several planes crash. When it comes to belief, that I think that's a good illustration. That it is important that we think through what we believe. That what we hold as a conviction in our hearts and our souls. And so I kind of want to just walk through this concept a little bit this morning, and we're going to look at several scriptures in the outline, and then later we'll turn to one that's kind of a core foundational belief, cornerstone, that's very important to decide whether or not you're going to believe it or not. So let's just think through this idea of your convictions, beliefs, mine, and maybe over this time and maybe during this week you can think through, what do I actually believe? First one is this, and just giving you these principles in your outline. The first one is this: you choose your beliefs. I think there's quite a few people in the world that kind of deflect that to somebody else. You know, my parents or my teacher or, I don't know, somebody. But you choose what you believe. Now, if you choose to believe that Elvis is alive, you know, we might need to have a counseling session, but we could talk about that. I mean, you can choose to believe that. If you choose that Bigfoot's for real, you can choose to believe that. No one holds your beliefs for you. You hold your beliefs, whatever they might be. And so that's the first principle, you choose. And God allows us to do that. He gives us the freedom to do that. Look what it says in Romans 1:25. Instead of believing what they knew was the truth about God, they deliberately chose to believe lies. And there is this human tendency to reject some beliefs for the sake of some false beliefs or some lies. But God basically has given us the freedom. He said, you get to choose what you're going to believe. Second one I want you to see is this. Your beliefs strongly influence your behavior. I found that when my kids were growing up, that as they got into their teens, especially 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, we could start dialoguing about not just their behavior, but why their behavior. What's going on? Why would you choose to be that mean to your sister? Why would you choose to do that? Well, because she... No, but why did you choose to do that? And just thinking through the kind of... Why did you choose to not turn that assignment in? I remember what will remain nameless. One of my children. Chose to do that several times. Their thinking was if they didn't turn it in, nothing would happen. They've learned very quickly that's not the case. They had a false belief, if you will, at that moment about if I don't turn it in, then it'll just go away. And so we had to kind of show them that that wasn't the case. What you choose radically, what you choose to believe radically influences your behavior. Look what it says in Proverbs 4:23 in the Good News Translation. Be careful how you think. That's an interesting phrase, isn't it? Your life is shaped by your what? Thoughts. Your life is shaped by what you decide you're going to believe and live by and whatever it might be. For instance, this morning you came in and you sat down. Most likely, unconsciously, you believed the pew would hold you up. Probably not consciously. Chances are you didn't walk in and go, I don't know, should I sit on this? Will this hold? But you just did. Today, most of you are going to get in a car and drive away. When you get in that car and start to go down the road, you believe that if you press the brakes, they're going to work. I bet none of you would get in a car and drive away if someone told you you have no brakes. You believe your brakes are going to work. That kind of idea. Some of you are going to go to lunch today, probably, and you're going to look at a menu, and you're going to choose something that you believe is going to taste good. You ever had one of those where your belief was wrong? Oops. But you have this conviction, belief, whatever you want to say, that, yeah, I'm choosing this because I'm convinced it's going to be good. It's going to taste good. So that's my point. Your beliefs at all kinds of levels strongly influence your behavior. And so we need to be aware of that, understand that, and kind of process that. It's, of course, especially when we're talking about the big issues of life. That kind of thing. Third one I want you to see is there are many false beliefs floating around out there. There's a ton of them. False beliefs floating out there. The statement that no longer is valid, that used to be valid, I guess, I'll believe it when I see it. Well, nowadays, with virtual reality and all this technology, you ever seen those things on the news where they show a commercial that if you look at it, you could swear that actually happened, and then they tell you it was all pasted together and it was fake, but it looks so real. This idea, many false beliefs floating around out there. One of, I think, the biggest sources of that is the TV talk shows. Now, don't tell me if you watch them, but if you do watch some of them, this will ring for you. I thought of some ways in which these TV reality talk shows, they call them and stuff, the false things that they communicate, and I made a list of them. See if any of these ring for you. All of your problems are somebody else's fault. That's a pretty popular concept. How about this one? The world owes you happiness. A lot of people kind of operate that way and think that way. How about this one? You'll be happy when you get everything you want. All right? These are all false, just in case you were wondering. These are all false. There's never any reason to feel guilty. You should never feel guilty. That's another one that's floating out there. All beliefs are equally valid. That's floating out there a lot. You shouldn't have to wait for anything, instant gratification kind of thing. You deserve it, right? And this is a good one. The answers for life lie within you. And that's out there a lot. So those are all false. And if you didn't know they were false, they are. You know, I don't know what else to tell you. 1 John 4:1. Don't always believe everything you hear. There are many false teachers around. Now, I think some of these false teachers don't know they're false teachers, you know? But they are. Bible also talks about another reason why false teachers exist, and that's for money. The Bible actually says that false teachers often exist because by doing what they do, which is telling things that are not really reality and true, it convinces people to follow them, and they give them money and buy their product or whatever it might be. Should I tell you this? Okay, I'll tell you this. Infomercial. I bought a product one time. I bought several infomercial products. Hey, some of them actually sort of kind of work. But one of them, you know, I mean, it was really a good, neat thing. I mean, it was awesome until I tried it. And it didn't work at all. Not even remotely. I thought, how did they do that on TV and then sell you this? And I did it exactly how they said, and it just doesn't work. A lot of false things out there, and we know that, but it's good to be reminded of that. Many false beliefs. Next one I want you to see. False beliefs cause lots of problems. They cause a lot of headache and a lot of problems. If you believe something, it doesn't even have to be true, and it can radically impact your life. Let me give you an example. Let's say that you go camping this summer, and you're up in the mountains, and you set up your tent and your campsite and everything, and it's nighttime, and you decide to go to bed, and you get in your tent, and you zip it up closed, and you get in your sleeping bag, and you're laying there, and then you believe that you hear a mountain lion pawing around outside your tent. Now, you believe it's a mountain lion. You can't see it, but you believe it is. What happens to you? You start sweating. Your heart starts beating a lot faster. The adrenaline rushes through your body and all that kind of thing. Based on what you believe, whether it's true or not, is kind of irrelevant to the moment because of how it impacts your life and your thinking and your physical body. False beliefs create all kinds of problems. Some of those problems are very devastating. The example I give you is kind of a semi, you know, innocent one you get over, but some of those are very, very devastating to a person's life. One of the ones that I think a lot of people struggle with that can be very, very damaging is you live your life to please others. Now, maybe initially that's not an evil concept. Probably isn't. You know, we start as little ones wanting to please our parents. It's just natural and probably appropriate. You want to please the ones you love. But you know, if you lived for very long, how bad that can get for you, how damaging that can be when you start living your life focused primarily on and driven primarily on this idea of making everybody around you happy. And that's one of those false beliefs that I've seen over the years be very destructive. So false beliefs can be very, very harmful. John chapter 8, verse 32, this is what Jesus said. You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Okay, next one. God is the only reliable source of true beliefs, or maybe you could say accurate beliefs. God is the only reliable source for this. Many people don't believe that statement. Romans 3:4 says this, God will continue to be true even when every person is false. A fundamental question that every person asks and answers, and they may not think it through carefully, but they operate life based on this. We all do. And here's the question, what's going to be my authority for my life? What am I going to decide is the place that I'm going to receive what I decide to be true? And follow that conviction or follow that belief. What's going to be my compass? How am I going to evaluate my life and determine how I should live it? What source am I going to use or sources am I going to use? And really, I think there's only two that you can choose from in the big picture. And this is kind of obvious. One is the world and one is God. One is man and one is God. You choose one or the other. And I think a lot of us Christians sometimes forget this. We kind of mix it up. We'll choose God for this piece of our life, and we'll choose the world for this piece of our life. And we kind of play that game, I think, unintentionally for most of us, but we just kind of easily fall into that and do that. And what I want to challenge us with on this issue is thinking that through and deciding you're not going to do that. That in all aspects of your life, your source is going to be God. But you have to make that decision. You have to think that through and make that choice. One of the problems with choosing the world is everything changes so rapidly and so often. And the reason it does in the world and the culture and people is because we're constantly learning new things, aren't we? We're constantly learning new stuff and figuring out new things and expanding our knowledge base as a culture and as people. And so, oh yeah, what was 10 years ago? Well, we've learned that that really isn't it. We got to tweak that and change that and adjust that. And so we're constantly doing that. And that's the problem with our culture. Let me give you an example that actually, in some profound ways, really impacted our whole culture. There are about 73 million baby boomers in our country. That's one out of every three people. Now, baby boomers are people that were born between 1948 and 1964. Raise your hand if you're a baby boomer, born between 1948 and 1964. Okay, all of you who are not should pray for us, because we're in deep doo-doo. Let me explain why. Dr. Spock wrote a book called Dr. Spock's Baby Book. And our parents bought into that book, hook, line, and sinker. Our culture just, in fact, it's the most widely sold book apart from the Bible. I mean, it is like, it was really popular in the 50s and the 60s, huge. Okay, so he, in his book, explains the most effective way to raise your children. And us baby boomers grew up with a lot of parents who just thought this is fantastic. Here's the minor problem. In his 70s, Dr. Spock held a press conference, and he said, oops, I was wrong. That's not the way to do it. I'm sorry. Never mind. Little late. I'm already dysfunctional. So is my whole family. Thanks to following your principle. But by masses, our parents' generation, not all of them, by masses, a lot of them chose to believe that what Dr. Spock said was right. And that belief directly impacted how they raised their children, which is us baby boomers. And it didn't turn out real well, in my opinion. So that's very important. That's what I'm saying. Guess how long a science textbook in high school? Guess how long is the shelf life of a science textbook in high school? 18 months. Now, I'm not saying the public school changes them every 18 months, but they're outdated in some respects within 18 months. Because why? Well, they're learning all this new stuff. Now, let's take God. When God said something 3,000 years ago, does he know something now he didn't know then? Answer is no. God is what we call omniscient. He knows all things. So there's not a learning curve for God. God doesn't say, I know I told you 2,000 years ago this, but you know, I'm changing my mind because I've learned some new stuff. He understood all of life and everything about life from the get-go. So when he said something in the book of Proverbs, or when he said something in the Old Testament, or when he said something in the New Testament, which are, by the way, those are ancient books. You know, the New Testament's 2,000 years old. The Old Testament's 3,000 years old or whatever, you know. So they're ancient. And so in our culture, ancient is not valid because a science textbook goes out of date in 18 months. But see, since God's the author of this ancient book, it's still valid. Because when he had people write it, he already knew everything to start. And so nothing changes in that sense in what he said and what is true. And that's why it makes sense to me, and probably for most of you, to choose that source. Remember the question? What am I going to choose as my basis to decide what's right and wrong and how I should live and what's important and how do I choose that? Well, you can choose the culture, you can choose people, you can choose your teacher at school, you can choose your parents. You can choose a lot of options, or you can choose God and what he told us in his ancient writings, because he's God, and so nothing changes in that respect. And his character, look at his character in Hebrews 6:18. It is impossible for God to lie. So, next one I want you to see about this belief concept. Building your life on God's beliefs is the key to a strong life. And I kind of wrestled with strong or stable or, I don't know, solid or however you want to use it. But Jesus said 80 times in the New Testament, I tell you the truth. Why do you think he said it 80 times? Because he wanted to help people understand, you got lots of sources here to pick from, but I'm telling you the truth. Then he said 20 times in the New Testament, you have heard it said, but I say to you, and you know what that phrase means? It means conventional wisdom says this, everybody says this, the TV talk shows say this, but I'm telling you, and it's different. It's different. And so he's trying to communicate with us how important it is that we know what we believe and then we choose the truth to believe that comes from him. Matthew chapter 7, Jesus gives an illustration of two houses being built. And he says, one house is built on sand. So when life hits and hard stuff comes, the house just crumbles. When the storms come, the house crumbles. And the illustration is, well, life hit, and you won't have a strong life. You'll have a very unstable life, a life that's like a roller coaster. But a house built on rock, and of course, if you read the text, Jesus is talking about the rock of God and his truth, then when the storms come and life hits and all that, it's still able to stand. It can weather the storm. 14 years ago, this church family decided to build a house right down here that Karen and I live in. And we got to be here and be part of seeing that house built from the very start, because we lived right next door to it. And I was over there one day, and some contractors were there, and they were putting these massive steel plates on various joints in the studs in various areas of the house and bolting them in. And I said, well, what are you doing that for? It's earthquake code. Why do we need earthquake code? Because the ground you're on is not stable. What? What do you mean it's not stable? He says, yeah, every once in a while down here we get what we call earthquakes. And the ground moves. It's not stable. I thought it was stable. Nope. False belief. You walk down the street and you think the ground is solid. False belief. It's not. So they put this earthquake code stuff. That's what Jesus is saying about your life and building your life, like building a house. You got to make a choice. Do you want to gamble on the sand? You can do that. A lot of people do. You can do that. It's your choice. But let me give you a couple insights about that, he says. You know, when the stuff of life hits and you try to live life and have a good life and all that kind of thing, it's going to be really, really hard, because you're not building it on something that can withstand the storms or the earthquakes of life. So choose to build your life. Choose to develop your beliefs on God and who God is and what he's told us in his ancient book. Because when he got it written all those years ago, he knew everything already. And so it's always stable and always true. And that's what Jesus is telling us in this story in Matthew chapter 7. Look what it says in 7 verse 24. Everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. Now, I want you to look at these two words, hear and practice. Those are the kind of active things. Everyone who hears, have you ever set, well, I won't get that personal. Have you ever been in a meeting and someone's talking and you're not hearing a thing? Okay, I was going to say, have you ever been in a worship service? But that might be a little too vulnerable. Yeah, we have that ability, don't we, to tune our ears out. So hearing's important. Listening is another phrase to use, to actually listen. That's really important for communication, by the way. I really have an issue with this personally. My kids have learned how to help me pay attention to them when they need to talk to me. But listening is important. Step one. Step two. What's step two? Practice. Isn't that what the text says? And puts them into, well, what happens if you just listen and don't put them into practice? Well, then guess what? You're not going to be building your house on the rock. Because you have to actually put it into practice. It has to impact your decisions and your actions. You have to decide to behave a certain way based on your belief and decide not to behave the way you might want to start with, but because of your convictions and beliefs, that kind of thing. So you practice. I got to tell you, when I was growing up, my folks wanted us kids to play an instrument. We had all the Fuquay, most of the Fuquay kids up here with their dad playing instruments. Well, my mom and dad decided that we should play an instrument. So they started off with piano lessons. Okay. Initially, I didn't really have a problem with piano lessons because I'd go once a week for a half hour. That's cool. I can manage that. But then they told me I was supposed to practice every day at home. Well, that was a problem because I hated the piano. Now what do I do? You know, I mean, that was a real struggle for me. My mom would put the timer there, and I would sit there, and she would stand there, and, you know, all my friends were outside playing and practice. You know, it was horrible. I hated it. Then my brother got a violin, and he started making this noise. It was unbelievable. It didn't last real long. My dad would sit there and say, try to encourage him, son, that just sounds so good. And I'm over there going, Dad, you are lying through your teeth. Sounds terrible. But in order to be good at something, you have to practice. We all know that. How about practicing your faith? How about practicing living like Jesus? You know, just now, I got some real issues with some of the pieces of what I'm saying right now, and I won't go into that. And just in terms of the struggle I personally have with how hard it is to do, and I really need God's strength and God's presence. But the fundamental idea is valid. To engage in what you believe and what God tells us and make it your conviction and then engage in it in life. Look, it says in Romans 12:2, do not conform to the standards of this world, but let God transform you inwardly by a complete change of your mind. That transformation that we all need, one of the key words there is the word let. Let God. Open yourself up to God. I mean, you might be surprised how many people come to church every Sunday, not necessarily this church, but any church, just church, come to church every Sunday that do not open themselves up to God. They have this misbelief that if they show up at church once a week, then as far as God is concerned, they're good to go. That's a false belief. Opening ourselves up to God, letting God be God in our lives and minister to us and touch us and transform us. Because I got to tell you that if you try it on your own, it won't work. That if you try to be a good Christian without God in your life changing you from the inside out, it isn't going to work. It just isn't going to work. And so this idea of letting God. Look what it says in 2 Timothy 4. This is under devote yourself to seeking the truth. I jumped ahead a little bit. Devote yourself, in other words, three things I'm going to wrap up with. Devote yourself to seeking the truth. Remember that Romans text where it said they chose to believe a lie? Decide you're not going to do that. And over time, you just are open to the truth and wanting to know the truth of God and not getting sucked into the world's way of thinking that has so many false beliefs, but to believe the truth. 2 Timothy 4, 3 and 4, there's going to come a time when people won't listen to the truth. I think we've arrived. But will go around looking for teachers who tell them just what they want to hear. They won't listen to what the Bible says. Know anybody like that? Just won't listen to it. Excuse it away, blow it off, whatever. but will blithely follow their own misguided ideas. So there's three things I want you to, I'm just wrapping up with as far as application. Make a decision in your life to be a truth seeker. Now, not everything in the Bible is black and white. You'd agree with that. There's things in the Bible that we have a hard time explaining and understanding. And if you're a truth seeker, you need to learn to be okay with that. The things where we just have a hard time figuring out, it's fine to say we have a hard time figuring it out. But truth seekers gravitate to the stuff that's not hard to figure out, that God has spelled out, and practice that and listen to that. So decide to be a truth seeker. Decide that the culture is what the culture is, with the many, many false beliefs and lots of roller coaster and up and down and everything changes, but you're going to seek truth from a source called God. Next one I want you to see, devote yourself to believing the truth. Once you discern the truth, believe it. When I do this marriage counseling with young couples who are going to get married, one of the things I say often is, love isn't enough. And I say that because they're at that phase of life where, you know, they're blinded by love and they're all into the love thing and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm trying to help them remember and understand this principle, that the kind of love they're experiencing right now and is exciting and really, really good. But if you're going to have a great marriage, that's not going to cut it. It's got to be more than just love in that sense. And so decide to believe what's true. And in this context, of course, is commitment and devotion to one another, a type of love that brings a commitment and devotion to one another. Devote yourself to believing the truth. I want to wrap up with a text. So if you will turn with me to John chapter 14. And I want to challenge everybody here. I want to encourage everybody here to process this truth out of John 14 and make some decisions about your own life in relation to this truth. John chapter 14, I'm going to read verse 1 through 6. I'm reading out of the NIV, John chapter 14, verse 1. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God, trust also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I'm going there to prepare a place for you, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. Jesus is telling his disciples this about the future. You know the way to the place where I'm going. So Thomas chimes in and says, Lord, we don't know where you're going, so how in the world can we know the way? Jesus' answer, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Now, we're talking about truth. And what Jesus points out here that's very, very important is he starts off with this phrase, I. So it's not a religious system. It's not a denomination or a group of people. It's Jesus himself. He says, I, personally, I am the truth. He also says, I am, not I might be, or I hope to be, or I could be, or I actually point people to the truth. No, he is the truth. I am the truth. And he says, I am the truth. Not some truth, not part truth, not a religious section of the truth. I am the truth. What's my point in all that? My point is that Jesus is clearly telling us, if you want to know the truth, if you want to follow the truth, then you need to know him and follow him, because he is the way, he is the truth, he is the life. It's interesting how some people's view of Jesus is so contrary to what he taught. I want you to understand something about Jesus, and most of you know this. Let's say I stand here and say, I am a good man. Now, let's not debate that, but most of you would probably agree, okay, Charlie Rice, he's a pretty good guy. How about if I said, I'm the only way that you can get to God? Well, we've just changed the whole subject. We've just changed the whole level of intensity. We've just changed everything when I claim to be something like that. And that's what Jesus did, and most of you know that. I had a conversation with someone very recently where they were talking about how wonderful Jesus' teachings were and how great of a man he was. And I just asked them, well, if he's a great man and a good teacher, have you read what he said? Well, no, but, you know, and I realized he just doesn't know much about Jesus. But if you read Jesus, he says, I'm the way, the truth, and life. Notice what he says in the text. No one can get to God but through me. So devote yourself to believing that. What does that mean? You decide that the only way you can have a relationship with the living God is through Jesus Christ. You decide that's true. Now, that's hearing, that's believing. Now there's a response or there's an action. The Bible makes it very clear that if you decide that's true, then you turn around and give your life to Christ. Most of you know this. Most of you in this room have done that. But that's this idea of believing the truth and living out the truth. The last principle I want you to see is this idea of living out the truth. Devote yourself to living out the truth, practicing the truth, living it out in your life. Now, let me wrap up with just a prayer and a statement. This is kind of just a general sermon about helping us pause and recognize how important our convictions are, our beliefs, how easy it is for us, even as God's children, to say, this portion of my life I'm going to build on the rock, and this portion of life I'm going to build on the sand, and how destructive that can be, and how we need to build all parts of our life on the rock, which is Jesus Christ. And so our whole foundation of our faith in one respect is John 14:6. Jesus said, I himself alone is the way and the truth and the life. You cannot have a relationship with the living God apart from me. It's impossible. There probably could be somebody sitting in this room this morning that's gone to church for a while, but has never confronted that statement, has never told God, I believe that. That's a conviction of mine that Jesus Christ is the only way to God. There's probably somebody in this room that has not actually dealt with that. Maybe you've been to church for 30 years. I don't know. But you've not actually confronted that truth, that statement. And the Bible makes it very clear that at some point each person has to decide. And here's another piece of this. If you decide that you don't believe in Jesus as the only way to God, if you decide you don't believe that text, then you're separated from God. That's what God teaches. And then when you stay separated from God forever after you die, you live in a place the Bible calls hell. Let me just say this in closing, then we'll have a prayer. What you believe radically impacts your life. And what you believe about Jesus permanently determines your eternal destiny. It really is very important. And so you're in church here this morning, so you probably think it's somewhat important. But let me impress upon you how absolutely critical it is that you make a decision about John chapter 14, verse 6, where Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and life. You can't get to God but through me. Choosing to believe that truth, that statement, and therefore responding by giving your life to Christ and living for Christ. Let's have a prayer together. Father, thank you for just reminding us this morning of how important it is, our convictions, our beliefs. Sometimes we kind of placate them and we set them on a shelf and we kind of just live life, but what we believe is critical, not just about Jesus, but even about a broader set of your truths, your life principles. And so I pray that anyone in this room that has not given their life to Christ will. Those of us who have, we're your kids. I pray that you will enable us to live the truth, not just hear it, but practice it. Live it out in our lives as you strengthen us and lead us. And Father, right now we're going to sing some songs. The intent is that we'll worship you through them. The design is that we'll enter your throne room together and we'll see you on your throne and we'll adore you. As we sing, the purpose is that it will lift our hearts and spirits into your presence. And we will express our love and adoration of you. So, Lord, for right now, just for a few minutes, help our minds to focus on your throne and on you. Help us to see you for who you are. Help us to set aside the distractions and to, from our heart and our soul, pay tribute to you and adore you and express our love and adoration of you and to worship you. Be among us and give us that ability to worship you with all our hearts. In Jesus' name, amen.